Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and I'm so sick, I'm not entirely certain that this is reality right now. What if I'm dreaming that we're podcasting?
You're not. It's fine.
I just had the thought, like, we should do a podcast while we're dreaming sometime. That would be so cool. And then I was like, no, you can't do that. That's not a technology that exists. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger. I'm the one who got you sick, so sorry.
You were so careful not to get me sick.
I tried real hard.
But we were sitting beside each other on a bus for like 13 hours, and I guess that fucks some shit up.
Yeah.
There's gonna be molecules floating in the air and whatnot.
Welp.
Sexy.
Yeah. So that's why our voices sound like this.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna go to sleep after this, and that's the most exciting prospect I've experienced in days.
I'm gonna eat ice cream.
Oh also my god, there's exciting. Ice cream.
Yes.
Fuck.
This episode is chaos. How did we make it through a year of episodes when we sound like this?
After we get done here, we're gonna lie side by side in bed eating ice cream and listening to stand-up. And this is perfect. So yes, we've been doing this
podcast. We're professionals. We've been doing this a year.
We're so good at our
jobs.
And
this is what we sound like.
But you're still listening, so we're doing something right, I suppose.
Those of you that have been listening for an entire year, that is awesome, y'all.
My heart goes out to you. My sympathies, and also, you're welcome. That reminds me of last night at your spanking birthday party when certain subby femmes kept saying, I'm sorry, every time you made a noise of pain. And I was like, no, every time you want to say I'm sorry, just say you're welcome instead. Step one to becoming a dom. Anyway.
That party was real good.
It was so good.
I am real bruised. For the record, I am laying on my side right now.
That's smart.
Because my entire ass and thighs are black and blue.
Yeah, they're a mess.
Hashtag birthday bruises on Twitter for pictures.
Yeah, go check it out. It was
because I've been tweeting way too many of them.
No, you've been tweeting almost enough. Anyway, happy podcast anniversary, friend.
Thanks. Happy podcast anniversary.
This is actually so momentous. It's making me think in this moment about how, like, I very intentionally celebrate, like, month anniversaries with romantic partners, and it didn't even really occur to me to do anything for the year, even though this is, like, very significant.
This is super significant. I feel like so many sex podcasts, and I guess podcasts in general, just kind of fall off and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
We did this every week for a year. I have not been that committed to anything in a very long time. My life is a mess.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We're both, like, super busy people. We both have mental health struggles. So there have been so many times when one or the other of us has been like, I don't really feel like doing this. And if it was just one of us, maybe we would have quit. But, like, I think the fact that it's two of us, we're just, like, really committed to this.
Yeah, nice. Our mental health didn't really, like, overlap that often, so there was enough times where there was always someone else who was like, bro, turn on your microphone. Do the thing.
It's time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been doing this for a year. What are some highlights for you? What are your favorite memories from a year of Dildorks?
I really liked the 420 episode.
Oh my god.
Where we got ridiculous questions from everyone, and I really want that to be a yearly tradition.
Oh, it is. It's already decided. We're absolutely doing that every year. That was the most fun.
Excellent.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, think
also, every time we've talked about blowjobs on the show.
I mean, that's
which is basically
every
episode, but specifically, like, the blowjob episode and the dicks episode were very blowjob heavy, and it just speaks to my soul.
I just saw a tweet. Someone tweeted at us today and said that our podcast encourages them to enjoy blowjobs and spanking more. And I was thinking,
that's really all I've ever wanted.
That's great. It also makes me want to expand what we do to celebrate some other sexual acts, because as much as I love those two things, I also want our brand to be more generally celebratory of good, sexy things.
So, like, focus for the next year. Let's talk about more finger banging.
More finger banging, yeah. We've developed a rep as cunnilingus haters. And for me, that's not really true anymore. I don't know that that was ever true. I think I went through a period where the only people going down on me were pretty bad at it. So I kind of lost sight of the fact that I actually do really like when people go down on me and are good at it.
I've had people go down on me probably less than 10 times. So I just don't have a strong enough opinion about any of that.
That's all right.
I just get distracted and I'm like, okay, just put your dick in my mouth. can we just...
I get anxious and nervous, and I'm like, you've been down there a while. Maybe put your dick in my mouth.
Yeah, I do have some anxiety stuff, too.
Well. Yeah, there's so much anxiety stuff. I would like to talk more good shit about cunnilingus in the coming year.
I would like to get more cunnilingus.
I mean, wouldn't we all?
Yeah. Especially, like, post-tea, my bits just feel so much better suited for that. Like,
you know what I wish we had been able... If we could have arranged my dream Dildork's anniversary party or ritual of some extent, I would have liked to get, like, two really good cunnilinguists to perform oral on us as we sit side by side, and then there's other people standing beside us who just have their dicks in our mouths. So we're just getting the full experience, which is different from 69ing.
Yeah.
Because all of the sensation is happening to us, and we don't really have to, like, do a whole lot. It's sort of like the sex nerd equivalent of, like, people fanning you with, like, palm leaves.
I still found my blowjob skills to be somewhat lackluster when someone else was going, like, doing stuff with my bits. Because I got spit roasted at camp. And
congratulations.
Thank you. They high-fived, which makes it real spit roasting. I was really enjoying sucking dick, but it was still just a lot of moaning onto dick instead of sucking dick. Because the person fucking me was real good. I need more of that dick in my life.
I'm having a moment of feeling weird about blowjobs lately because someone told me that my BJs were toothy, which, to be fair, he was really large. I don't think I'm normally toothy, but I was, like, real subspacey when I got that criticism and I wanted to cry. I just, like, laid down on top of him and was like, no, I'm sorry. And he was like, no, like, we can do other sexy things, it's fine, and, like, tried to keep it going, and I was like... My heart, like, is broken.
That is the important sexy thing.
I literally have a framed embroidery on my desk that says I heart blowjobs. I don't know.
I really do heart blowjobs.
I need
to
rediscover my enthusiasm. I'll get there.
I always find it hard. I honestly, like, when I suck someone's dick and they don't compliment my skills at least once, I'm like, excuse you.
What is the point of any of this?
Excuse you.
Yeah.
Like,
want to try that one again?
Like, yeah. Like, come on now.
Speaking of podcast highlights, though, before we went on a blowjob related tangent,
which is basically a highlight of our podcast.
So on brand. Yeah. I think, like, one of our goals with making the podcast was we wanted to increase kind of, like, the multimedia and, like, speaking sides of both of our work. And I think we've definitely done that. I definitely feel like I've gotten better as, like, a storyteller and just, like, a speaker. I used to be super nervous and awkward about that stuff, and now I feel like it comes much more easily to me.
Yeah, I've definitely found... I don't know that... I mean, I feel like I've gotten a little bit better, but I feel like this was always, like, one of my strengths. Mm-hmm. I just really like that I have, like, an outlet for it.
Yeah.
And it makes it... Because Kate does all the tech stuff on this because I'm useless.
You're welcome.
And it's, like, makes it a lot easier for me to get that kind of content out because my biggest issue with audio and video content is I'm like, cannot edit, do not know.
Yeah. And I like the editing. It's sort of like a couple hours every week that are just sort of like zen and I just focus on making us sound good. And I don't always do a great job, but I'm learning. Definitely when I go back and listen to the
better
early,
than I could do.
The early episodes, I'm like, yikes, the audio levels, y'all.
We're getting there. We got this. Yeah.
I also really love that people have started to recognize us from our show. Like, I remember I rolled up to Woodhull in Virginia, and, like, I hadn't been in the lobby of the hotel for more than, like, 30 seconds, and someone was like, oh, hey, a dildork. I was like, yes, that is me.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the branding of the dildorks more than anything else we've done.
Which, like, shout out to Amy Gardner.
Yes.
Who we thank every week, but, yeah. Like, never enough, because she really nailed it.
Yeah. But I think we really, like, with the name and the tagline and the art, and we, like, really had a cohesive brand when we started.
Yeah.
Because we already knew who we were as, like, people and bloggers and educators.
Right.
Going into this. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't really get to do unless they're rebranding part mm-hmm. of the way through their blog. But, like, so many bloggers I talk to are like, oh, this is just the name I have, I guess.
Which, including both of us.
Including both of us, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to kind of, have created this.
It does break my heart a little bit every time someone is like, so your podcast, the Dildo Dorks, right? And I'm like, no.
No.
It's a portmanteau.
It's clever, damn it.
Someone did find my website by searching Dildo Dorks the other day, so I was like, well, Google's doing its job at least.
Someone found our website by searching nude dicks.
Oh my god, this was the comedy highlight of the past week. after I saw that, I typed nude dicks into Google image search because I was curious, and we were in the third row. And then I tweeted
around a bunch of lovely dicks.
So many good dicks. And then I tweeted about it, and a bunch of people tried it out for themselves, and I think that we moved up in the ranking. Like, people were telling me.
Because people kept finding us and clicking on us. So a few hours later, we were, like, the third result.
You know, if that's the legacy we leave in this world, I'm very pleased with that. The Tildorks synonymous with nude dicks.
I mean, I am a nude dick a lot of the time. Let's be honest. Okay, you didn't even tell us some of your favorite episodes, though, yet.
I love the episode about selfies and dick pics, speaking of nude dicks, which I think is actually the one that Google image search links to.
Yeah.
But that is one of my favorite episodes, because I love ones where we both give advice and tell stories.
Yeah.
Because that's always what I like about other people's media, too, like, especially sexual media, is, like, when they use their own experiences to inform advice that they're giving you.
And I think the times we've talked about, like, sexting and online dating, we had some really, like, actionable stuff, too.
I always just think my opinions about Tinder and OkCupid are just basically a list, a very long list of things you should never do. So I think if we explore that stuff more, I would love to be more positive about things and, like, try to come up with, like...
There's nothing positive about online dating. I have never had a positive online dating experience. Nothing positive.
Wow, that's a harsh criticism. I wouldn't say I've never had any. I've had some decent sex, and I've met some decent people. That's about as generous as I can be.
I do not think I've ever had good sex from online dating. No one's jumping to mind.
I've had good sex from Twitter. I've had good sex from people who knew me from the podcast, which actually is... in some ways a highlight.
Oh, I did have good sex from someone who knows me from the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I've had sex at all from Twitter.
It's funny because we a few times have been like, I don't like when people listen to the podcast and think that they know how our sexuality works. Like, that's bullshit. You got to get to know us in person, which is true. And I think if someone listens to the podcast, they probably have a better sense of, like, if we might be sexually compatible and some things that I might like. Like, I like not having to explain to new people, for example, I am not that into G-spot stuff, or I am not that into objectification or humiliation. I like when people just kind of know that. So that's been a weird side effect of this show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the person I hooked up with fisted me, so they knew what they were doing.
Mm. Yeah. Well done.
All go team. So we want to kind of expand our brand for more sexy things. Is that just because you want to get more sexy things from the people listening to the podcast?
Like, not, no.
They think I hate oral, and now they're not doing it. I must change this. I need to update my brand.
know.
Coincidentally, I also like makeouts.
Makeouts are so good. No, I forget what the question was. I'm so disoriented.
The question is there wasn't a question. I'm just picking on you.
What do I want from the Dildorks?
That was going to be the question. I didn't actually get that out. But yes, what else are you looking forward to in the next year of Dildorks? The next 52 episodes?
So it warms my heart when people credit us with certain phrases or concepts, because that makes me feel like an important person. And my favorite example of that is, I mean, not know, which is like, I was thinking about writing a post that's just like my favorite Bexisms. And then I was like, I can only think of like maybe two or three, because that's the one that I say all the time. And it's just, it's infectious.
And that came, like, that was not a me thing. It was in a friend group that was not blog related. And it came from a dude that I had a crush on, that I had, like, so many daddy dom feels about. Mm. Which, to be fair, every time I said goodbye to him, he would kiss me on the forehead and say, make me proud. So, like, the fuck was I supposed to feel about this human?
So he was being a ridiculous person, and it was totally fair for you to steal his catchphrase and make it into a Dildorks thing.
Exactly!
So I love that. I also would really like to do more live shows.
Yeah,
because we did that one at Woodhull, and it was so fun. I actually just went to a live show that the McElroy brothers were doing of the podcast My Brother and Me, and it was so, like, high energy, and everybody there loved them, and I was just having all these feelings of, like, someday this could be me.
Could we're famous podcasters, too.
Maybe eventually. Yeah, what do you want to see us do in the next year?
So some of my favorite episodes that I didn't talk about earlier are the ones where we have guests on. Like, Lola's was phenomenal.
I love her.
And then we had Andre Shakti, which was really good. Mm-hmm. And Cooper Beckett was our first guest.
We get so nervous before every guest episode.
Oh my god, we really do.
We're such dorks.
I'm always like, you know, I don't, we like get on the podcast regularly with each other, and we're just like, oh my god, we're gonna call them. Okay, we gotta call them. Oh jeez. We call them, and they're like, hey, and we're like, hi, hey, how's it going?
We're like, what if they don't think we're smart or funny?
What if it's awkward? What if we can't talk to a stranger for an hour, and then we just silently stare at each other on Skype? That does not make for good radio.
No, the ultimate fear. So who, you want to have more guests on? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Who's on your dream guest list? Let's try to manifest these opportunities.
I'd love to have Harris O'Malley, Dr. Nerdlove.
Yes.
He's so good. He used to be a big part of, like, the pickup artist community, and now does dating advice for nerds, with, like, a feminist lens, and it's just so good seeing a lot of, like, these pickup artist-y techniques that are really a foundation of what he's learned about dating, like, stripped through a feminist lens, mm-hmm. to the core of the stuff that's actually useful.
Mm-hmm.
And then just watching him tear apart when men are the worst and being like, you can't be like this, why are you like this? It's just so good, and his writing's so good, and I'd really love to, like, talk to him about, you know, dating advice for nerds and awkward folks, and just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like his stuff too. I think top of my list for dream guest is Tina Horn. She has a podcast called Why Are People Into That, and she also wrote this great book called Sexting and a couple of other great books, and she's just a really engaging educator. I'd love to talk with her about dirty talk in particular,
because yes.
She's really kind of the queen of that, I think, and it's something that so many people are really bad at, including myself. And
honestly, I think... So I have this theory that dirty talk is a lot like flirting, in that everyone thinks they're bad at it, and we're all mostly fine.
Mm.
Like, you're just, everyone is just terrified that they're bad at it, mm-hmm. and, like, that is the problem, is the fear that you're bad, mm. not that they're actually bad.
It's true. It's more about feeling silly or feeling embarrassed than actually embarrassing yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe we'll reach out to those two people this year if we gather our guts enough.
Yeah. I'd also really like to talk to Sinclair Sexsmith about submission, because they do the whole submissive playground thing.
Mm-hmm. Malina Williams.
Oh my god. Yes.
I think Malina Williams is too cool for us, but maybe one day. Yes.
She is so amazing, though. She's one of those educators I talk about how I would literally let Malina Williams teach me how to boil water and just be like, oh my god, keep talking.
So, speaking of educators that are too cool for us,
we somehow got two of them on our show. And Kate left me alone to interview them like a grown-up.
So I had to go see the aforementioned McElroy brothers, and I was like, Bex, you can do this interview by yourself, it's gonna be fine. And then we had to, like,
I fully did not think it was gonna be fine, but I did it anyway.
It was so good. I was editing it and texting you, like, you're really smart, this is great.
And also, they are super smart.
They're amazing. So we're gonna let you listen to that now, and then we're gonna come back afterward to do a little fuck that, fuck yeah.
Are we going to tell them who it is, or are we just going to surprise
them? They're going to introduce themselves. Also, it's in the description of the episode if you look in your podcast app. Spoilers. Here are our mystery guests. Ooh.
I am so excited to have you guys on the show. Today I have Sunny Megatron and Ken Melvoinberg. We just went through this and I almost messed it up. I'm super excited to have you guys here. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do and why you're so awesome.
Absolutely. We are excited to be here. And you said we were awesome. Thank you. So yes, we are Sunny Megatron and Ken Melvoinberg. We are sexuality educators. We're also married. We teach about everything sex, and we specialize in kink and BDSM and also a lot of the extreme stuff as well. We are behind the Showtime sex positive television show, Sex with Sunny Megatron. And our very newest endeavor is our new podcast called American Sex.
And that's actually part of why I wanted to have you on the show, because I've been listening to it lately and I was like, great, this is the perfect opportunity to sit them down and talk about all kinds of nerdy kink things, just because I needed opportunities to do that.
Very cool.
The show's been awesome so far. I know you've had a couple of guests so far. It's just been super interesting. One of the things that really stood out to me recently, though, was I saw you guys a couple months back at this point on the Explore More Summit, which is amazing. It's done by Dawn Sarah, a lot of interviews with really great sex-positive folks. And one of the things that really stood out to me at your talk was the way you talked about negotiation around kink, particularly your Rough BS acronym. I was wondering if you could tell listeners a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And this is a really interesting system that Sunny and I developed together. And what you're really doing here is, if you know what role you are in some sort of a kink relationship in regards to, are you more dominant? Are you more submissive? When you're using this system, if you're judging it as a dominant, it's things you want to do to somebody. If you're a submissive, it's things that you want to have done to you. And what the system is, it's Rough BS, R-O-U-G-H-B-S. And each of those letters stands for something different in all different aspects of S&M. So, for example, what we're going to do here is you want to rate each of these things. And Bex, if you're willing, we would like you to do this for us.
Yeah,
so
totally.
So are you more of a toppy person or more of a bottomy person?
More of a bottomy person.
So you're going to rate on a scale of 1 to 10 how much you want each of these things done to you by somebody that you consent to do these things with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
So 1, that sucks. 10, that's fucking awesome. Do it twice. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like to be restrained?
I would say that's around a 4 or a 5. I could give or take it, but it's fun if it's there.
Okay, that's great. And like, sort of what we're doing here, by the way, is what you want to do is, like, once you decide what each of these numbers are, it's helpful to you if you can get somebody that has approximately the same number. So that way you see there's a little bit of overlap, and it shows that you guys have a lot of common interest.
And also, too, you know, this isn't just a real quick, let's go through, you know, 4, 7, use each one of these things then as a sounding board for more in-depth conversation. So, for example, you're like, well, yeah, it's a 4, and this is why, or you might say, you know, I'd like to use use rope, but, you know, handcuffs hurt my hands, or there are certain situations. So use each of these things to then further the conversation about that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one is the letter O. How much do you like to be owned by other people?
That one's pretty high up there. I would say that's probably an 8 or a 9.
And the next one is the U. How much do you like to be used by other people? And of course, this is with consent.
That's also up there with being owned. So again, like an 8.
And now the G, this is a little bit different, but on the same wavelength. How much do you like to be given away to be used by other people? Again, consensually.
That one's a little edgier for me, so I'll put it at a 7. Like, it sounds super hot, but I would need a lot more, like, caveats and discussion around that, you know?
And that one, the G, is something that you don't really do for pickup play. It's more that you take this with multiple partners that you've had, you know, some kind of past with, and then you negotiate that kind of a scene to be given away to somebody. Now, the H is something that actually inspired an entire class we teach, and the H is humiliation. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like to be humiliated by other people?
Oh, that's like a 2.
Now, it's interesting that most people that, like, start thinking about what humiliation is about, they make it as a subjective thing to what humiliates me as opposed to what is humiliation. And it's actually a huge spectrum of things. And I'm going to let Sunny talk about this for just a second.
I know for me, when I hear humiliation, I'm more of a dominant person, but let's just say I'm in a submissive role. When I hear humiliation, my mind automatically goes to the worst things that really honestly hurt me at my core. So to me, it would be being called stupid and useless and ugly. And those things are just horrible. Like, why would I want that? Oh, he's touching me. Like, oh, you're not stupid and useless. Thank you. But that's not all humiliation is. Humiliation isn't the thing that's just going to crush you. Humiliation can be fun to play with. So maybe the humiliation that gets me off might be, if I'm submissive, being made to parade around and shake my butts, you know, to the people. Yes,
butts,
it's embarrassing.
Plural, both of them?
Yes, all of my butts. You should see. Yeah, it might be even 3 at this point. But so, it, you know, gets me red in the face. It's embarrassing. Maybe it's shameful, but it's playful. And it can even be therapeutic if we relive some of the things that we've experienced shame about and we reframe that into something fun and sexy. It can be a positive.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I actually, I was at Dark Odyssey this past weekend at summer camp, and there was a whole class.
Oh, you missed it.
Yeah.
I loved Dark Odyssey.
It was so good. It poured on Saturday, so it was a very wet camp in a different way than it usually is.
Like, what's wrong with a wet camp?
Was that at the Fistatorian?
I had a lot of fun, though. It was actually my first year.
Oh, it's actually our favorite event in the, like, we go to events everywhere, and that is our single favorite event in the U.S. is, like, Dark Odyssey, especially Fusion, is the one that we've gone to the most.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Fusion. I'm gonna have to try that one next year. But one of the workshops I went to was one on, like, humiliation and shame and all of that stuff. And it was really interesting to me, and objectification, that was the other big thing. And it was interesting to me to see how, like, it could go from these, like, objectification stuff that I'm like, oh, that's super hot, to this, like, really intense kind of humiliation stuff. And I was like, oh, that's super terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a huge spectrum. Yeah, it's a huge spectrum, and that's one of the reasons why we had that entire class. So, for example, if I were to ask you how you feel about being humiliated in this way, what would you feel about being forced to dress up in a costume and go trick-or-treating, but now as opposed to October? But it would be like a rage with people ahead of time, so it's still a form of humiliation.
Not strangers.
But, yeah, but it wouldn't be strangers, and there would be like tricks for you to do or something that you would need to put inside you or something that would be negotiated and consented to ahead of time.
See,
now, does that change things for you, or does that make it still, yuck, that sucks?
That could be fun, and for me that, like, I would label that more as an embarrassment, which seems, in at least my experience of kink, seems different than humiliation, not just to a lesser degree, but also a different kind in that, like, I'm embarrassed about what I'm doing, but I'm not ashamed of who I am. And that's what I, like, that's what, when I talk about humiliation, it seems more, like, about who I am. And I'm like, oh, that's a lot for me. And I know for some people, they absolutely love that, you know?
Yeah, and it's a form of edge play that's completely psychological, and you know, it's, you really need to plan this with somebody that you've, again, been with for a while. You don't want to do that as pickup play. Now, the next letter is B. How much do you like to be beaten by other people? Like impact play is what we're talking about with that, on a scale of 1 to 10.
I'll put that around a 7. I like different kinds of impact. I also like rough body, so like punching and kicking and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so that would all be sort of in that spectrum of things. And then the last one is S. How much do you like to serve other people?
Let's put that at like a 9 or 10.
Oh, so that's awesome. So yeah. If you couple this rough BS system and then you do a yes, no, maybe list along with it. So like, and if you're not familiar with that, that's just like a list of all different sorts of kink and sex acts that people do. And you like literally answer, yes, that's something I want to do. No, that's something I don't want to do. Maybe I haven't tried it before.
Yeah. So like the rough BS system is more of kind of a overview, top line, almost macro look at how do I want to construct a scene where we both get the most out of it? And then the yes, no, maybe list or specific negotiations about specific acts, put it on a more micro detailed level. So when you put those both together, you have a really good roadmap for what type of scene you want to put together as a dominant and what specific things you can do.
And I love that, particularly because for me, my experience of kink is much more psychological, and it's much more about like the whys than it is about what we're doing. So things like service can make a whole variety of scenes fun, even if like the physical acts is not specifically one of my kinks. Like I may not have a foot thing, but if we put it in a service framework, I can get really into rubbing someone's feet, you know?
Oh, that's awesome.
And one of the things I actually do when I do my yes, no, maybe lists is I add on the words that I like used and the feelings that I want to have in the scene or that I want my partner to have in the scene. So we're not just discussing activities, but we're like, okay, things like humiliation or, you know, do I want to feel like a good boy or a naughty boy and like that kind of stuff. So I really like, I'm just a nerd for any sort of communication tool, but I really like the way that you kind of delve into stuff that wouldn't necessarily come up on a yes, no, maybe list with this one.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, it tends to work for us really well. And I like what you said about what kind of feelings do you want to feel or kind of what's your end goal. If you've ever listened to sex educator Midori teach about kink, she very much focuses on like what feelings are we going for? You know, what will you be feeling or what signs will you be exhibiting when I know that you're done or you've reached what you want to reach in a scene? So those types of insights are really important to have.
Yeah, I loved, I learned in one of Midori's workshops, that part of her negotiation is, what will you look like if you're enjoying the scene? And what will you look like if you need me to check in or you're having a bad time?
Yes.
That's so clever to me. Because, like, Kate, who, you know, my co-host for the podcast, both of us really like spanking. And for her, she will, like, pretty frequently cry during spankings. Like, that just happens. And that's a good sign. Like, spankings are cathartic for her. That feels good. If I cry, the world's ending. Like,
right.
And knowing the difference on that is super important, especially because I often go nonverbal during a scene. So not being able to say that in the middle it's super helpful to have like covered that at the beginning.
Yeah, it's something that so many of us overlook, but then when you hear it, when someone says, this is what you should be negotiating, then it's like, that's so simple. Why didn't we all think of that? That's brilliant.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Really important.
Exactly. And one of the things, so moving on from that a little bit, one of the things I love about, like, seeing you guys educate is that you're always talking about, or I feel like I always hear y'all talking about the kink stuff that I don't hear other people talking about. Specifically, I think probably one of the first things I ever heard you teach about was clown sex and clown fetish.
Yes.
And I feel like, I know y'all have a lot of feelings about that, but I feel like a lot of people kind of are very wary of it and don't really, like, know much about it or know how they feel about it, or they're just like, oh, God, that's weird. So, like, tell us a little bit about what is so fun about that and how y'all got into it in the first place.
Well, I think I'm going to field this one. This is something that's been a long time fetish of mine. because I had two grandfathers. Both were entertainers, and one was in the circus. So the circus was one of the first memories for me. And what was really erotic for me personally was watching the trapeze artists in the skimpy outfits and watching them. And then it got to be where, like, the clowns were able to mess around, and they had, like, this almost like this feeling of power. And what I didn't know is that coulrophobia, which is the fear of clowns, is actually the number one fear worldwide. And it actually has to do with people's inability to understand and empathize facial expressions when you see that somebody is frowning, but they have a clown smiley face going on. So there's this contradiction between what they're displaying and the emotion that they should be displaying.
And that's another one of those things that, like, makes total sense once you say it, but I, like, had never put those together.
And it's interesting, because I've done a number of TV shows about this, the most recent one, and I think it's on Amazon. It might be on Netflix, and I know it's on Amazon for sure. It's a show called Killer Legends, and I'm the person that they had contacted to be a clown historian, because I'm an expert in the supernatural and the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And true crime stuff in Chicago. And this is something that they were talking about, like John Wayne Gacy and the Wallenbeck Circus Train accident and all these sort of different clown things. And this is something that developed as an interest for me such a long time ago that I also started to have a fetish developed around it. And what I would do is I started by going to dungeons with a submissive of mine who was a pony girl, but I made her into a circus pony. I dressed up as a clown, and then I developed some balloon bondage skills and started, you know, doing that and just scening with it for hours and hours. And it was all about being cathartic for both of the people involved in this instance. And, like, I've had submissives that were terrified of clowns, and I would dress them up as the clown so they could see the mask on their own face. And it was something that actually assisted with their phobia in that. And it just leads to all sorts of fun play using rubber chickens and balloons, cream pies, both literal and metaphorical. And Sunny needs the microphone. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. No, I want to add, though, Ken's reason for getting into clowns and my reason for getting into clowns, I think, are completely different.
Oh, yeah.
Although we ended up meeting in the middle, and now, you know, we both enjoy it. So for me, I have always been kinky on the inside. All of my sexual fantasies, they've had an element of kink to them. But when I grew up and I started expressing myself sexually, I was very repressed and vanilla, and I did what I thought I was supposed to do. So it wasn't until I was about 35 years old that I was like, wait a minute, I'm missing all this kinky stuff. And I found out there were other kinky people. So clown play did two things for me. One is, when it came to sexuality, I had always tried to uphold myself to this false notion that when you are being sexual as a woman, you have to have your hair perfect and have the most perfect lingerie and say the most sexy things in the bedroom voice. And really, in reality, I'm queefing, I'm falling off the bed. Like, it's really not traditionally beautiful or sexy, but it's fun. So clown play allowed me to let go of my inhibitions, to be silly, to, if I did accidentally fart during sex, it was okay. It added to the fun. Also, when I discovered kink, I found all the stereotypes, like everyone's wearing leather and they're very serious and Domley McDomlington from Domstown, and, you know, and I was like, that is so not me. I'm not into your stereotypical BDSM archetype. And that was what showed me, hey, kink can be anything you want. It can be the rubber chickens and the balloons and the I'm gonna fart and we're gonna laugh, or I'm gonna, you know, suck you off and then look at you and go, whoa, your cock tastes funny, you know, because you're fun. And it made me really able to embrace my own sexuality in my own personal way that fit my personality.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. One of the things that, like, I always kind of knew but was made, like, super apparent to me when I was at camp this past weekend was how much kink is just grown-up playtime.
Like, oh, absolutely, yeah.
Ridiculous make-believe silliness. Like, I saw a scene with, you know, this person in, like, a Girl Scout uniform selling cookies, and then, like, their cookies, the whole cookie stand got raided by other people. And, like, they started doing, you know, filthy things to the Girl Scout, and there was a fuck saw, and it was, like, ridiculous, but it was all just, like, make-believe and pretend. And she's, like, bent over the thing being like, but what about the cookies? And they're like, cookie sales are over. And it was It was so cute and fun. And I think a lot of people are kind of scared to do that with kink, scared to, or sex in general, just scared to laugh and do like the playful stuff.
Well, one of the things I have to give Midori props for, again, is she describes kink as childhood play with adult privilege and better toys. And that's really, that's exactly what it is. And when we do a lot of our psychological study and like our, you know, theory behind kink, we've actually looked into play theory and the neuroscience of play and why play is important in general. You know, we satisfy a lot of the same things with our kink that we do when we go play Dungeons and Dragons with our friends because we're dorks.
I mean, that's fair. Dungeons and Dragons is great.
Yeah, we're tapping into a lot of the same things. There's just more juices and tits the kink way and less dice sometimes, not always.
I was gonna say sometimes there are some tits at Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know about yours, but
well, you know what's interesting, we actually hosted an event at, or no, I don't know if I was with you.
Yeah, I was
because you were at home at that time.
We did it together. Yeah, Grandpa.
Grandpa's having memory problems. So we hosted an event called Dungeons and Dragons in the Dungeon, and at that time I owned one of the dungeons here in Chicago, and we had a convention there, and so we had volunteers to like take off clothing for every natural D20 that was rolled. We made it really confusing for the tops because we had a cleric of Callistria there. Who was kind of cosplaying a D&D cleric, and you could actually heal one hit point for every actual lick you took with a single tail. So there was tops that were metagaming, trying to figure out, okay, I want to be toppy, and I'm not going to take a lick, but I'm almost dead. Fuck it, I'm going to get up, I'm going to take 20 licks. And it was
pretty amazing.
In the toppiest way possible. And we had a bunch of just really great events, both D&D, and we did a version of Call of Cthulhu, but everybody was cats, so it was Call of Cat-hulu. So we had sort of some fun role-play type stuff that, you know, both Littles and the Pet Play people were just amazed that we included this into a convention that was both kinky and gaming-based.
That's amazing. That's, and I feel like there's such an overlap in those communities that, like, everyone, I'm sure, loved it.
Oh yeah, it was just a blast. And one of the other, you know, you were talking about play earlier, and it made me think of one of the events that we have planned for next year. So we do classes like abduction and interrogation, and we're going to be doing Bob Ross abductions at camp next year, where everybody dresses up like Bob Ross, and then they put, "Would you like to be abducted? We're going to put you against this tree, and we're going to be a little S here and an L, and we're going to get some cerulean blue and some black. Here's a nice bruise for you here." And so we're just going to like all be, we're going to do passive abduction. So it's like total play. We're going to do total hardcore, like impact play along with it, but very gently trying out being against this beautiful tree at the side of the tree.
Happy little tree.
So excellent.
Happy little tree.
And I love, like, I just love how the kink community comes up with things like that, where like part of it is like, this would be super hot and also hilarious. And it's just all of this, like, make-believe and play.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And that's one of the things that, like Sunny was saying, we include sections about play theory in almost every one of our classes at this point, because there is so much common ground between that and what we do therapeutically in BDSM and kink.
Yeah, I think that's super fascinating. And then on the other end of things, I know you're also, speaking of your workshops, you're working on a new fear play workshop that's going to be covering a whole range of things. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have a series of classes that we're doing that combine different emotional states in BDSM, and we explore what it does with the brain, with the central nervous system. And we just talk about all the different ways people can react to it, you know, these different emotions, and how you can use it in advanced BDSM play. So we have one in humiliation. The newest one, though, is one that we have on fear and how you can use fear play. So it's strong psychological edge play, but with tools, how you can manipulate people on a very basic level. So it's everything from doing advanced scaring techniques that involves, you know, sensory deprivation and doing unknown things behind them. Not exactly like ASMR, but you're using a lot of sound elements to your advantage, and then doing something all of a sudden where you might be like pretending you're going to drop them on the floor, but they don't actually get there. So yeah, we also have a class on, like I mentioned, humor humiliation, fear, and disgust is one of the other ones that we're going to be doing.
Yeah, and I'm interested in how, because fear and disgust both seem like counterintuitive to sexy times for some people, so I'm curious what you kind of learned in developing these classes about how they can be super hot to play with.
Like, one of the examples of disgust would be, like, having your head shoved into a toilet while somebody's fucking you from behind. Like, now, that's not going to be for everybody, but that's what makes it that much hotter is when you're put, like, on a bathroom floor or you're using food and sensory play and you get, like, a huge dichotomy. Like, they might be putting, you know, a wonderful-tasting caramel-salted chocolate in 1 minute and then, like, stinky candy fish in the next one, you know, just to give you like a variation. So what you're doing is you're being sadistic with the food. So it may be a strawberry one moment and an onion the next, and somebody isn't going to know what to do with that. But disgust is something that develops with that, and that is actually leading to the sexy times, as is putting people in a disgusting position or spitting on them or using golden shower time. You know, all the, you know, there's a variety of ways that you can use disgust. And fear is interesting because it's fear goes through our body in two ways. There's a high road and a low road that it takes. So the low road is where it immediately activates your fight or flight response. So if there's a loud noise, the first thing that you want to do is get out of the way of whatever it is. Then you're going to take about a tenth of a second to analyze really what's going on here. And then you're going to respond in a slightly different way. So as I was studying for this, I was driving my youngest daughter to school, and I decided to do a fear experiment on her. So as we were approaching, we were both really tired.
As all good parents do.
As all good parents do.
Yeah.
And hopefully the letter people don't get called at us for this.
Yeah. So,
but as we approach her school, I just suddenly look at her and go, you know, and just, like scream at the top of my voice. And she's like, what the fuck? And then what I was looking to do is to, and then I asked her, what's 2 + 3 × 4? So your cognitive mind is at this point trying to analyze whether or not there's a threat that's going on. And I know she knows the answer because she was just studying the order of operations. Mm-hmm. And we had just done this the night before. And sure enough, she was so freaked out by the unexpected action that she was just really analyzing what was safe. And then she started giggling about it.
Right. It kind of scrambles your brain and then makes you laugh, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that kind of like when, like, you're crossing a street and the car comes, like, right in front of you and you just barely, like, don't get hit by the car, and then you're just all giddy and giggly afterwards as all the endorphins come back down.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's a more sadistic version of duplicating why we go to scary movies or ride roller coasters where you're in the middle of that roller coaster and you're just like, oh, my stomach's flying out through my mouth and, oh, God, why did I do this? And the minute you get off, you're like, let's go again.
Yeah.
It's reproducing the same sort of thing, just with different elements.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I definitely do that in physical ways with kink, when I, like, endure a lot of pain or things like that. But doing that psychologically, I mean, it feels a lot scarier, which is kind of the point.
Yeah, and it's interesting because chemically what's going on in the brain is that the part of the neurotransmitters that are activating both the high and the low road of fear response actually echoes the same sort of high people on cocaine do, only there's no chemical effect. So it's making you feel very similar to what you would feel on cocaine, but without the use of any drugs. So they use virtually the same mechanism to achieve both fear and the drug use, which is, you know, kind of interesting that that's, you know, something that is a hole that was be filled by, you know, two very different things.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. I'm curious if anyone is, like, hearing either this fear play stuff or, like, the clown stuff earlier and, like, they're really interested in exploring some of these more edgy or, like, different kind of kinks. Do you have any tips for maybe, like, first steps or discussing this with maybe their partner for the first time or anything like that?
Absolutely. Now, the first and foremost thing is to do, you know, first of all, negotiate with whoever it is that you're doing with. Decide what limits you have as far as hard limits. Then you're going to go into maybe a yes, no, maybe list and rough BS. What you're really trying to do is plan out a roller coaster sort of thing where, what I mean by that is the person that's giving you the limits is telling you, these are your twists, these are your turns, this is where you're going upside down. and they're giving you the limits to what can happen, but you're the engineer, you're the one who's designing this for them, so it's a fun experience, and you're going to play with their fears. So what's really important there is you really want to start to know the person both inside and out, but you have to know them psychologically. So you have to know, you know, as much about their mental health as you do their physical health. So if somebody has PTSD, if somebody has, if they're bipolar, if there's anything that's going on, that would be no different than if you found out if they were diabetic or have high blood pressure. There's nothing inherently wrong with any of those things, but you need to respond accordingly. You don't start, you know, showing people pictures of giant tigers if that's what they're really scared of and it gives them PTSD. That's what you don't do. Mm-hmm. But if they have something that is close to that, you want to bring them to the edge without taking them over. Bend them, but don't break them.
Also, if this is something that you are curious about doing with your partner, but you haven't really even experimented much with kink, go slow. You know, this is like really diving into the deep end of the pool. This is psychological edge play, which means there are inherent risks in this, maybe not physically, but psychologically. You could trip upon someone's trigger and kind of mess them up without even realizing you did it. Or, you know, so there's a lot of thought and care, knowledge about consent, knowledge about kink. So I would say, start reading, start learning about kink, start going to classes. If you've gotten to the point where you are planning a more big, elaborate fear play scene, get help. If you play publicly, recruit a couple of people to stand on the sidelines to kind of be the double checks to make sure you have all your ducks in a row to see things that maybe you're not catching.
Rubber chickens in a row.
Rubber chickens in a row. Sorry. I'm all for, when it comes to big, complex, edgy scenes, to have help, have extra hands, extra sets of eyes. That always is helpful.
Definitely. And I think it's probably also helpful to have those people there towards the end of the scene for, like, aftercare stuff, because I feel like with a scene like this, it's especially important for the top as well as the bottom to be getting aftercare, because with psychological stuff especially, I feel like tops can run into a lot of, like, complicated feelings of, like, where did that come from? How was I so mean? Like, that kind of stuff. Am I a bad person? Kind of feelings.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that, like, a lot of people don't address is somebody who's having top drop. And what you can do about that is aftercare. And a lot of times it's just like, for me, it happens when I hit somebody that I don't intend to, like if I'm using a single tail, because single tails, they're never absolutely perfect every time. And if I hit your love handle and that's not the place I was aiming for, I turn into a Jewish grandmother at that point. I'm going to feed you and take care of you, but I'm going to be a sadistic bastard the next moment, as long as I hit you where I intend. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to hand this over to Sunny real quick.
Oh, yay. Yeah. Top drop is something that, you know, as Ken said, we gloss over. We focus on the bottoms needing aftercare, which they absolutely do. But sometimes, you know, I've seen tops that after they've done a really heavy scene, maybe it's their first time, you get that question like, oh, did I do the right thing? Did I go too far? I know maybe when I negotiated, that person said, I want to get to the point of tears, but were those the right kind of tears? You know, mm-hmm. They made some noises I've never heard them make before. Wow. You start second guessing yourself as a top, like, ooh, did I go too much over the edge? So it's really important to be able to deconstruct both, you know, alone by yourself or maybe with other people, with third parties and with the person that you played with, and get reassurance that, you know, no, you were fine. You didn't go over the edge. You didn't, you know, mess up in any way. And a lot of us don't do that and end up kind of in a mental pickle afterwards. Like, why do I feel like shit?
Yeah, there's so much emphasis on communication before the scene. And then I feel like a lot of education just kind of drops off after it. And it's like, no, there needs to be almost as much communication after, if not more, depending on how intense the scene is. Just kind of recapping things. And for me, that's like a really important part of my aftercare. And I can imagine it's very important for tops in these scenarios too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that it's very subjective aftercare, no matter, you know, top, bottom, switch. I've never really had two people that want to be treated the same way, the same after a scene. So like one submissive I had wanted to be an ottoman, and she just wanted to be an object and have me put my boots up on her. And she just wanted to sit there and not think. I had other ones that would want to cuddle in bed for hours. others that wanted to be caned until the cane broke over them. I mean, and you know, others that just, they want to get a snack. They want to go get tacos and talk about the scene.
Right. Aftercare isn't always, you know, a lot of people frame aftercare as like, bring over a warm blanket and some soup and cuddle. And it's not, yeah, some people, that's their aftercare. But aftercare is as individual as people. And sometimes it can be the exact opposite of whatever you might assume aftercare should be.
Yeah, for me, a lot of times it's leaving. Like, I need to I need to introvert and be alone, and I always try to, like, take space for the other person and, like, hug them and talk to them if they need to or whatever. But then I need to bounce, and, like, we can discuss this tomorrow. But right now I need to, like, introvert and watch Supernatural. Like,
yeah, just, like, kind of chill. And then it's interesting, just, like, the different variations. I had one sub that, like, her thing was she wanted chocolates, nylons, and anal sex. So she wanted presents and anal instead of, you know, but like, I think I'm on your team. Like, I'm on team, leave me the fuck alone, let me think about it, recharge my batteries.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I need to discuss, but later. I want to thank you guys so much for being on the show. Y'all were awesome. This was super fascinating, as you guys always are. Aww. Can you take a minute and just kind of tell our listeners where they can find more and learn more about all your stuff and hear you guys be smart more?
Absolutely. Probably the most central hub of us is sunnymegatron.com. You can find all of our blog articles there, our class schedule, also the different classes we teach if someone wants to book us to come out and teach, and all the fun stuff is there. As I mentioned before, we also have a new podcast. You can find that at americansexpodcast.com, and it's on everything, you know, iTunes, all the places where you get podcasts. On social media, I am at tag Sunny Megatron. That's SUNNY Megatron. Pretty much everywhere, except Snapchat. I'm Sunny_Megatron. And then Ken, tell them where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter and on Facebook as at PsyChicken. It's PsyChicken. It's actually Psychic Ken, but it looks like PsyChicken when you stare at it.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much.
I was going to say one other thing. People can find me on FetLife, and I run the Clown Play group there. And you can find me there as Lord Thunderpants.
Excellent.
Man, that interview was so good. You killed it, friend. You killed it so dead, like a murder fear play scene on topic, kind of.
What?
I'm delirious and sick. I thought it was, the fear play stuff was really interesting to me. Like, that was my favorite part of that interview, because that's something I have only, like, touched on just the tiniest bit, and it reminded me of, like, I think I've talked about this on the show before, but, like, I used to have this dummy partner who would, like, put his teeth around, like, my windpipe, but so lightly, to where, like, I knew that if he wanted to, he could literally kill me, but he was choosing not to, and he would just lightly nibble, and I noticed that it brought these noises out of me that I never make at any other time, that were, like, whimpering, like, animalistic fear noises, and I couldn't control it, and I was like, this is so hot, and also genuinely terrifying. And it made me think of that and, like, how much erotic potential there is there that I have totally not explored, because it's scary.
Yeah, I really loved hearing them talk about play and how sex is basically grown-up play, and I'd really love to, like, nerd out on the science of that with mm-hmm. them, but I didn't want to get too much into that in the interview because I had so much else I wanted to talk about, but I wanted to really be like, tell me about this science! Tell me more!
Yeah, that's one thing I'd like to do, actually, in future on our show, is have more science-y stuff.
Yeah, oh my god, Emily Nagoski.
Yeah, like, mental health stuff and, like, psychology, like, that. I did a psychology minor in school. That's my shit. And, like, sex and psychology is particularly an area of interest for me, so I'd really like to do more of that. But so, Fuck That, Fuck Yeah is our weekly segment where we tell you something we hate and something we love. And this week, we're talking a year in podcasting. What is your Fuck That for this year?
I mean, I have lots of Fuck That's for this
so
year.
So many. I think there's 51, in fact.
also true, but I was just talking about 2017 as a whole.
So many, yeah.
But my fuck that for a year of podcasting is, honestly, this is going to sound so terrible because you do all of the tech stuff, but simply that tech stuff exists, that I can't just speak into the world and have the podcast appear.
I'm going to choose to believe that what you're saying is you wish I didn't have to edit this when we're done because I'm sick and need to sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. That's exactly
what I'm saying. Also, just the fact that there is a whole portion of this thing that we create together that I don't understand and can't be like, let me do this for you since you're sick. Like, the number of times where you've been like, oh, I don't feel good, or I don't have time to edit this, or I don't have time to do this thing, and I'm just like, I actually have time, but none of the skill sets. I cannot help it all on this joint project.
I've actually, to get a little dark with you, I've actually thought, like, what if I just died? Like, I think the podcast would be over.
Oh, it would. It fully would. Or you'd just get completely unedited rambling.
Like, it would just be an hour of you crying unedited, just like...
I am 100% the old man that refuses to figure out technology, that is just like, you know, this damn iPhone. I don't know how it works. I just... And I'm fully convinced that I am incapable of learning. And I just wish I could help you sometimes.
I mean, you know, there's this thing called Google. I hear you can learn a lot of shit.
It cannot save me.
Well, let's give it a shot first. You're getting real defeatist over here. Anyway. We'll keep our marital squabbles off the show for the most part.
What's your fuck that?
My fuck that is imposter syndrome, which is a very real thing that I deal with. I hesitate to be like, we're a big deal. We're like a moderately sized deal.
I'm a big deal.
But I really struggle with that. Like, even when Woodhull was like, do you want to do a live show at our conference? I was like, but we're not anybody. Like,
we've been doing this a year.
Yeah. And then,
like,
the other
this
thing
is really
like,
affirming for me being a big deal. I'm like, we made it, guys.
The funny thing about my imposter syndrome is that when people say nice things, I'm like, that's not true. I'm not anybody. And then when people say mean things, I'm like, I've been a professional sex writer for over 5 years. I know my shit. Shut the fuck up and step off.
Excuse you, have you seen how many Twitter followers I have? Literally my go-to every time someone's snarky with me at Twitter. I'm like, just saying I have more followers than you do.
At time of recording, I was waiting patiently to hit 6969 Twitter followers, and I'm actually just gonna check real quick. Oh, I'm at 6968!
Oh my god!
That gasp I just made was an uncensored,
100% genuine, oh my girl juice reactions that you just got right there.
That was a lot of feelings packed into a few decibels. Oh Jesus, I'm so tired and sick.
This episode is chaos.
So anyway, imposter syndrome sucks. What's your fuck yeah?
My fuck yeah is that because of the podcast, I have at least an hour and a half every week where I have to talk to my best friend.
And like, don't you love being forced to talk to somebody?
Yes! But no, it's like in the same way that I like make a point to talk to my sir because he's long distance every week. I have that like built into our relationship where it's like there's never going to be more than a week that I haven't like sat down and spoken to my best friend.
Yeah.
And like sometimes we sit down and talk for like 30 minutes before recording because we're like, no, bitch, I have so much to tell you. Oh my God. You will not believe. What I sound like.
Spot on impression of yourself.
When I have gas up. What's your fuck yeah?
My fuck yeah is what good business partners we turned out to be. Which we I was did. Thinking about it, like, we didn't put a ton of thought, or I didn't put a ton of thought anyway, into like how we would work as business partners before we launched this. Because, like, we knew we were really good friends, but it's hard to say if that will translate to, like, a more professional partnership.
Yeah.
And I've definitely had situations where I partnered with friends on, like, work projects, and we ended up, like, it damaged our friendship because things got stressful and we weren't living up to each other's expectations in various ways. And I think that what we've been able to do is we each take on the tasks that we feel more comfortable doing. Like, I do the tech stuff, like we were saying, and you do kind of the more, like, business side of things, because I hate that shit. And I think that that has really, like, kept our resentments low. Like, we do occasionally get into fights. Like, I remember you got mad at me when I, like, got fucked right before a recording. Because you were like, you were 2 minutes late because you were getting fucked. That's unacceptable. I was like, but it was fodder for the show. But for the most part, we have remained a good friend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've done pretty well.
Yeah. I would have been so sad if this podcast was the demise of our friendship.
Yeah, that would have been rough.
And now I feel like I've jinxed it by saying that.
Oh, no.
Let's never not be friends.
Okay.
Let's just agree.
We have a whole brand built on it. I'd have to cut so many stickers in half.
Now the sticker just says orcs. What does that mean? Is that some kind of Dungeons and Dragons reference?
Mine says dill, so I'm set.
Well, hopefully that'll never happen. But it'd be pretty funny if it did.
Remember that time this afternoon?
I was just gonna say.
You literally cried because I told you you might find someone you liked better than the childhood picture of me on your phone background.
Wait,
I was like, maybe one day you'll change that to someone that is not me, and you cried. Tears poured down your cheeks.
The thought of having a better friend than you was really upsetting to me. I was, like, angry at my future hypothetical self. I was like, how could you do this to Bex? That's terrible. You cruel, awful woman. And then I literally started crying.
I have literally fallen off the bed.
We should always podcast while delirious. It's hilarious.
Oh, we shouldn't. Because this happens.
Oh my god.
This is chaos. We should... Thank you for listening to the Dildorks.
Thank you so much.
You're free now. We will bring you back to your regularly scheduled podcast
truly,
next week.
With sincerity, though, I do want to say thank you so much for coming with us on this journey and for supporting us. It really means a lot. It's so touching to have found our people and to find people who get us and who don't think that we're weird or who do think that we're weird and are into it.
Yeah, that's in a charming way.
Yeah.
Should we reward them?
Ooh. We have a treat for you, friends. We're doing a giveaway. It is for one of the greatest sex toys to ever exist. I'm not being hyperbolic. This is literally true. Would you agree?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a toy called the Android Pure Wand. Ever heard of it? I actually just wrote about it in Glamour magazine. Not to toot my own horn, but I did. It is, I think, the greatest G-spot toy that has ever been made. It's made of stainless steel. It's beautiful. I'm sure we've talked about it in many episodes.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Whenever I sell it to people, I always say, like, okay, do you like G-spotting? Because this toy is going to turn G-spotting up to 11. So if you like G-spot or prostate stimulation, this toy is going to be the most intense G-spot and prostate stimulation you can get. It's kind of, I describe G-spots especially, but prostates too, as liking like a deeper muscle massage, like a lot of pressure, and the weight of the stainless steel is really able to kind of give that pressure.
It is wonderful. It's
so good.
Indispensable toy box.
And I have an extra one that I'm going to give to you.
Yes, as a thank you for being so wonderful to us all year long. If indeed you were. If you were an asshole to us, maybe, well, I can't control if you did it or not. So, whatever.
Don't be an asshole. Because if you are, I'll throw the pure wand at you. You'll still get it, but it'll hurt like a son of a bitch.
Don't threaten violence on the internet. There's a record of that now. They're going to know exactly who did it.
No, they won't. My voice doesn't sound like me. I'm sick.
Okay, Bex, tell the people how they can win a pure wand.
So the contest is going to run until September 20th, and what we want you to do is to tweet your favorite Dildorks episode with a quote from it. So tweet the link to either our website or the iTunes page or whatever with your favorite episode and a quote from it or your favorite moment or the reason that that episode really stands out to you.
We just want a lot of compliments, basically.
Tell me I'm great.
Yeah.
And tag us in the tweet at the Dildorks on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. So you only have a week to do this from the day that the show goes up, because it only goes until September 20th. So I hope that you heard this episode before then, and if not, I'm sorry. Maybe one day you'll get a pure wand of your own through other means. It's hard to say. You never know.
And y'all can do this once a day, so you can get up to 7 entries if you listen to this on launch day.
I'm sure you have 7 favorite Dildorks episodes.
Yeah, we're hilarious. You can find 7.
So funny.
Unfortunately, because the pure wand is heavy as fuck, it's open only to the States and Canada, because I cannot afford to ship it overseas, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm real sorry. It's... I don't have anything to say. I started as if I had something to say about that.
It is a very, very heavy sex toy.
Yeah, it's just real heavy. That's really all there is to say.
And it's gonna cost me a lot of dollars.
It'll be worth it. Someone's holes will be very pleased.
Excellent. I live to please people's holes. And so, that's another thing that is on the internet right now.
Well, I think that's
someone
already...
make that your ringtone.
Implied by our Ovra. Thank you so much to Sunny and Ken for joining us on this episode of the Dildorks. Their podcast is called The American Sex Podcast, and you can look them up on iTunes and everywhere else. Thank you also to you for listening. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net. And the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Currently, my Instagram has a lot of pictures of Bex's butt, so get on that.
And I'm Bex. You can find my writing at bextalksex.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. My Instagram also has a lot of pictures of my butt, as does my Twitter. Pretty much the hashtag birthday bruises has a lot of pictures of my butt from my birthday party, and it is very bruised. I got hit 350 times.
It's a lot of butt-related media.
And just, I am so sore.
Yeah.
But it was so good.
So worth it. It was a great way to spend our Dildorks anniversary.
Yeah, it really was.
Thank you so much to...
I didn't say who we are together.
All right.
Together we're the Dildorks. If they don't know that at this point, I'm worried about them, but I still need to tell them that we are at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and they should tweet at us at the Dildorks with their contest entries to tell us and remind us of all of the great, ridiculous shit we've said this year, because I know there are listeners that remember our episodes better than we do.
Yeah, please.
Because I just say this shit. I sometimes don't even listen to it a second time. I just say it, and it's out in the world, and then people tweet my quotes back at me, and I'm like, really? Interesting. I said that, huh? Great.
I'm so smart and so funny. Who'd have thought?
Oh god, I said that. Either or. But yeah, and you can find us at the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. We've been doing this a year. Tell us what you thought of this past year. Your ratings bring us up in the search rankings, which is important for older podcasts because they tend to favor the newer ones. And like, we're a year old, so like, that makes us old.
We're ancient. Thank you so much to Protodome for letting us use his song, I Want You in My Bedroom, as our theme song. Damn, a year later, I still love that song.
We just listened to it the other day.
I know.
Just sitting down and listening
just
to it for fun.
Just bopping along. It's great. I've heard it so many times. Thank you also to Amy Gardner for doing our art. She is at starboots_ on Twitter, and she did a great job. I hope that we never have to rip those stickers in half.
I would be so sad.
Thanks for a great year, folks. Until next time, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye!
My entire life has built toward this moment.
Welcome to Kate's bed, y'all.
It's the sexy podcast. Where our voices are full of phlegm and testosterone.
Yes. That's what makes people sexy, isn't it? Phlegm and testosterone.
Anytime anyone utters the phrase sex appeal, what they actually mean is phlegm and testosterone.
And so I get the ladies.
That's the cocktail we drink in order to be who we are.
No, that crossed a line. I'm uncomfortable. This person's butt, though. Jesus. Okay, I'm putting Tinder away.
Are you, though?
Yes, it's away. It's all the way over. All the way over away.
Okay.
Did you hear Ken being like, question, do you know how to say my name?
Yes.
And I was like, and that made me nervous because I fully knew how to say his name, but then he freaked me out. I was like, yeah, I'm a creep. I listen to everything you've ever done. Which is not true, but I listen to a lot of things he's done.